Welcome to Course in Miracles.
So it would be plenty sufficient to begin the year, begin our meeting, first meeting of the year, with one of the biggest reliefs that A Course in Miracles offers. This is the topic we'll discuss tonight. Indeed, it's another one of these challenges that is so basic to how we live our lives. You wonder, how could any spiritual program deal with something so dirty? Mm-hmm. Something so ugly. Something so normal to be human. Wouldn't we just ignore it entirely and go on to be loving and spiritual? Wouldn't that be the right thing to do? Maybe for some programs, not Course in Miracles.
Nope.
Course in Miracles is working at removing the very blocks in our minds, the blocks that we hold up, the blocks that make it so that we are not aware of love's presence here and now. The set of blocks, the set of beliefs we have, the set of illusions that we hold as true. The set of things that you have to only somehow be free of, somehow deny, or somehow justify and keep in order to be free. But A Course in Miracles says, you dream a dream. And the dreams become so real to you that with your own thoughts, you block God. It's no longer in your reach to understand what God is. We can speak of it, we can approximate it, but we've gone so deep into the rabbit hole of being egos that we no longer experience love. We do call for it. We pine for it. There is this love that remains the most powerful experience we can have. And blessed are you who have ever felt this energy. This love. You have, but you probably haven't noticed it. You may not have even recognized what it was. True love, with a capital L. Because this world is made to hide it, and it's done perfectly. We are here with this book, and with the help of each other, to break this pattern of blindness. And tonight, we'll be discussing one of these blocks, and it is guilt. Guilt! At its core! At its surface, guilt. Would you know that guilt is a block to the awareness of love's presence? So, let's just take a look at it for a little while. Time to get honest with yourself and check in. Do a little inventory in your mind. Go to the bookshelf in your mind and pull out the one that's got G-U-I-L-T written on it. What is it? What does your book say that guilt is? What does it mean? Guilt. What is guilt? Think about some examples when we would commonly use the word guilt in this world. Are you guilty of anything? Can you find something you're guilty of? You would call yourself guilty of. And if you are somebody is guilty. Well, what do you deserve for that? And finally, and this is for, you can share this with the group if you like, come up with love's answer to guilt. Oh, you're guilty. Oh, you. Yeah. What would love say about that? Just give me some words or phrases that we can recognize, or you would recognize, or you would know, or you would accept, would be love's answer to your guilt or somebody else's guilt if you couldn't find anything you're willing to admit to. What is love's answer to guilt? Dirty, dirty little law of guilt that just comes so quickly, seems so normal and fair. It's so common, so dirty.
Sneaky, too.
Sneaky, isn't it? This comes right away. All right. He says, no, it's so common, it's so normal. Guilt. Anybody have an idea what guilt is? Want to volunteer? Anybody?
Define? Absence of love's presence.
Absence of love's presence.
Like that block.
Yeah.
You know, it's a belief in the sand.
Uh-huh.
It's a need to get punished.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that peace we want to get rid of.
The need to get punished.
Yeah.
The need to get punished. Guilt is the sign that correction is needed in order to return things back to normal or peaceful or something. Guilty means punishment is needed.
Is it like an internal signal or is it an external signal? Like, I think of guilt often as being used as a control mechanism.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Others imposing their will on you and using guilt as a mechanism to really get what they want.
Uh-huh.
But making you feel guilty.
Did you find that you were guilty of anything in your own little private... I want to ask you what it is.
Well, I know. I remember, actually, we had this conversation several years ago.
We did. Yeah.
And my answer was no.
I think I remember that now. Yeah.
and it's a resounding no.
Yeah. Good.
And only since I've really been... walked in my talk, do I feel not guilty about things?
Okay.
You know, like,
did you find,
I did feel guilty in the past.
Can you
so.
Think of somebody else being guilty of something in this world?
Well, it's easy to assign that.
I'm just checking.
No.
Yeah, so what is, anybody else have any clues on what guilt is?
That's a good point.
You can't be forgiven. I mean, it's so bad. It's not forgivable.
So harm has been done.
The guilt.
Huh? It's wrong.
Yeah.
It's wrong. That's when we're guilty. It's wrong.
See, I have a little different take because unworthiness came up for me. And it didn't matter whether it was me or whether it was someone else, but it's like this, a different kind of lack, like that somebody's just unworthy.
Yes. Because they've done this wrong, because they have crossed the line, because they were not loving, they have been lowered now to not eligible in some way. They're unworthy. Yeah.
I feel guilt when there's something that I feel like I should have done and I didn't do it.
Yeah.
So it has to do with something that I told myself that I want to do or I should do.
Yes.
So there's an implication that there's a right and there's a wrong way to do it.
Yeah. Is that guilt or regret, though?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
Is that guilt or regret, though?
That's guilt.
That's guilt? Okay.
For me.
Yeah, sure. Well, yeah, you can certainly, those will go hand in hand.
Yeah.
Once you make the judgment and condemn yourself,
mm-hmm.
and you can't go back and fix it.
Right.
Especially those.
I'm guilty.
Now you're guilty and you regret being guilty. Maybe we're going to compound that.
What did you ask? What's love's answer?
What is love's answer?
would be that there is no right and wrong way.
Ah, there we go. Mm-hmm. There is no right and wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice.
So
very
then, that gives me a sense of freedom.
Yes. Yes.
And then I feel like I'm not bound by some arbitrary rule.
Yes.
That I think that in my mind, and that's so it's linked to the ego.
Yeah.
The ego has created the rule.
Yes.
Your ego has created the prison.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And so love's answer would free you from the prison.
It would free you.
I remember our conversation from several years ago, too. We talked about how babies are not born with a sense of guilt. They have surprise, they have fear, they have, you know, all these base emotions. But guilt is a purely learned experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You need to learn right and wrong first. And then
somebody taught you that somewhere along the line.
You do not. Yeah. And how a loving mother. How many loving mothers here have had to do some tough love work raising those kids? And explain how guilty that little cheat is for doing that.
So is the some traditional forms of Christianity like where... You know, you're a sinner.
Mm-hmm.
You should feel guilty for that.
Mm-hmm.
Is that part of?
And you pay the price called penance.
Mm-hmm.
Once the guilt is established, you will now have to do so many Hail Marys and count the rosary and make your prayers and you're pleading to the right to somehow maybe get your soul saved because you're now unworthy.
Huh? Or pay. Catholic Church, you can just pay off your guilt.
Go to the head guy, make a donation to the new library, and see if he doesn't give you absolution. Absolutely. Somebody else has the power in the Catholic Church.
There's a whole process.
To forgive your sins.
I didn't know money was involved.
Well, it can be, but you know, otherwise it's for free if you wait in line and get a little booth on the side of the, and you just tell your sins, and then the priest will forgive you. And he'll say, go forth and sin no more. But you've got to admit it. You've got to spill your guts.
Oh, good.
And get it off your chest.
Atone for your sins.
Atone for your sins by admitting it.
I mean, I'm not Catholic. Does that work for people? Do they really get it off their chest and feel okay?
Well, the Catholic Church has a money-back guarantee.
I'm not saying what the Catholic Church says.
I'll tell you what, when you walk out of those confessionals, you still feel guilty of
something. That's what we're going to study. We're going to study the remedies. The remedies of guilt will be dispelled along with guilt. If Course in Miracles says guilt is not real, right? Everybody here knows that?
Mm-hmm.
Guilt is just like fear. If you can't actually put your finger, you can't draw a picture of guilt and say, there it is. That's a big one. That's a little one. It's the same with fear. You know, you can't actually put your hands around it, right? Fear is just something other than that, right? And so it doesn't actually have a start and an end. Therefore, there is no absolute way to relieve you.
That's what I was thinking. Doesn't have a one.
there's no any guilt over a particular issue. Of Course in Miracles has us understand dearly through the first lessons. It's not, you're not upset for the reason you think. That's one of the lessons. It says nothing you see means anything as you see it, see? You've given everything you see all the meaning it has for you, and it's like lesson six. You see nothing as it is now anyway. So what you've got is a bunch of meaningless thoughts, and your mind is preoccupied with those meaningless thoughts that were formed at a time where you were looking at something in the past, also not seeing as it was then, giving it meaning out of your own head from your other past. Therefore, what you thought happened or said or dead or did or done or happened last week was none of what you thought it was. And you're upset about it today? That's meaningless. And your mind's preoccupied with those meaningless things, like the right and wrong you described very nicely. And of Course in Miracles tried to just lay this on you, but it comes in pretty strong. Those first lessons, and they can be quite depressing and unsettling for that. He's going right at your belief system really quickly.
This unraveling happened actually for me in this meditation that, like Mark, it was this idea of unworthiness, and I thought, well, where does that come from? And it's a judgment. And then I thought about how arrogant it is to assume that I know that answer. Mm-hmm. But the next level up that occurred to me around the unreality of this that mm-hmm. you just described mm-hmm. is that, as far as the answer, love's mm-hmm. answer, is that the all-encompassing, you know, what God is.
Yes.
Can't, like, the all-encompassing cannot be guilty. Like, therefore, it was just this unraveling that, like...
Are you saying nothing real can be threatened?
Exactly.
Nothing unreal exists?
Yes, I am. Ah. And I used to think that that was such a, like, I don't know. It's kind of a high-level thought, right? So I didn't always, like, grasp it. But in this meditation, it just, like, all unraveled. That, like, if God exists as I know that to be true,
uh-huh.
then... there just can't be guilt. There's no... I don't know, it just unraveled.
You're me. Saying it's not compatible with God.
Mm-hmm. Because God is all that is, and I'm a part of God, uh-huh. and if I'm a part of God, uh-huh. how can I be unworthy? God can't be unworthy of himself. Like, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, that's right. There'd have to be some separation from God in order to be unworthy of God.
Mm-hmm.
There had to be a disconnect mm-hmm. With truth.
Mm-hmm. There's no right
and
wrong.
That's exactly what I thought about what love would say.
Yeah, what would
I
love
don't
say?
Recognize guilt.
That's it? Yeah. What would love say? Masako?
Well, guilt comes from us projecting out. So the remedy would be to extend the miracle.
Mm-hmm.
There's an extension.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Hear it. Allow for the miracle. Love's answer would be, look for the miracle instead of the problem.
Mm. Yeah.
See that. Mm. How kind is that? How gracious? How right-sizing is that? To see the miracle right there with the problem and then extend that. Yes, indeed.
Today I was, I usually paint like in the late morning, early afternoon, and then I go work out, and I don't usually do anything after that because I'm usually too tired.
Yeah, okay.
So today I didn't paint, and I went and I worked out, and I came home, and I'm getting out of my car, and I look over at that painting I'm working on. I thought, I feel like doing painting, so I went and I painted, and that was like a miracle. I don't usually do that.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
But. I was feeling guilty that I hadn't done it.
Mm.
So I at a certain point I like forgave myself for not doing it.
Mm.
And so that gave me the freedom to feel like to have an opening to paint at a different time.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just kind of locking it into a certain time
mm-hmm.
frame.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there's like a moment when I forget like the rules or the structure that I've created.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And that gave me the freedom.
Yeah.
Like just letting go of that.
Yeah. How do you know when you're guilty? When do you cross the line?
Well, it's your own making. You mm-hmm. have to have rules that you've set up.
Uh-huh.
Some boundary, some line that you, that's totally arbitrary.
Uh-huh.
Something that's totally made up, like, I must do it like this.
Uh-huh.
I must do these things.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I must, I should.
Right,
should. Or I think somebody else expects me to.
Yeah, somebody else expects you to.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. My wife told me to wash my hands. And I didn't do it, so therefore I'm bad.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's bad. And then it's worse when she tells you to wash your hands and you think, yeah, I should wash my hands, and you still don't do it.
Right.
Now you got both
right.
minds
you
attacking.
Andrew?
Yeah.
And then in the back of your mind, it kind of gnaws at you, and that feeling of that gnawing is that guilt.
Who's in control here anyway? Yeah. Are you out of control? Are you even capable of taking care of this situation? Oh, it can be the guilt.
That guilt is a separation because you've separated mm-hmm. yourself from uh-huh. any sense of peace of mind, any uh-huh. sense of tranquility,
yeah.
any sense of
yes.
Loving,
yes.
Acceptance, Uh-huh. You know, everything that...
There's no more going with the flow here.
Nothing.
Guilty means deserving of punishment.
It's a sentence.
Harm has been done. It's a sentence.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Harm has been done, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's been some loss.
Mm-hmm.
We don't usually think about guilt a whole lot when there's no loss, there's no damage. The whole court system is built on damages.
Yeah.
You go to hire a lawyer, he's going to say, well, how much are we talking about here? How much did you get hurt? And then we'll talk about whether you have a case. Naturally. Yeah. Right? So look at how quickly that ties into our world. How natural this guilt thing is.
So let me turn this around on you for a second.
Yeah.
With all your knowledge and all your wisdom and all your mastery of the material and so on.
Yeah.
Do you feel guilty about anything?
Yeah.
I mean, is it like...
Yes. Yes. The guilty... So Andrew is guilty of speeding just to get here tonight. You know? Fast lane. And I know the laws, and I went well above the speed limit. So Andrew is guilty of that. And then what do I deserve? I deserve a correction from a peace officer, which is what I call them now since my last speeding ticket. Oh, it's a peace officer, and we're going to get more peaceful, right?
That's so funny because I thought I saw your car stopped when I was coming through.
No, they didn't catch me today.
Oh, you didn't?
No,
okay.
No.
I thought, was there a car? Because there was somebody. Okay, well, boy, my mind really went with that.
Well, thanks for the blessing. No, I was
you're
not.
You're okay, but anyway.
I'm okay. I was not stopped.
Do you feel bad about that, about speeding?
Yeah, in a way I do. Absolutely. Especially since I've had an awakening around it.
Mm.
A spiritual awakening around it. Years ago, I was speeding along, got the old whole speeding ticket thing, and I just reconciled the whole thing, right-sized the whole thing. And it was around the idea that, they call policemen peace officers. They really do. And after I got the ticket, I was willing to drive in the slow lane along with everybody else. All the rest of you losers driving the speed limit. Well, I was one of them now. And I thought, this is great! You know what? Driving the speed limit is such a wonderful thing to do. It's relaxing. I'm not looking or darting my eyes around and paying more attention to my lane. End of the conversation in the car. I'm just driving along behind the other cars and the other people blowing by. And I thought, I could get used to this. And so ever since then, I've been driving lots more slowly. And so when I do drive, it's been years now, since I was busted. And so Andrew doesn't mind making up time in the fast lane. Andrew wants to drive slower. I want to drive in more control and take the pace and harvest that peace. It's amazing. Same with the red lights, I used to be anticipating the red light. Come on, come on, come on, come on, come on. Not anymore, as I've said many times. Yeah, I've had a shift on that one as well. Like, what am I doing? Anticipating the future. I just opened up into the red light meditation. And now every chance I get, especially when I'm next, right? When you're like, I'm the one watching the light, That, because I've decided, I had an awakening around it. I want the peace that's sitting there for me at the red light. Why would you miss that? It's great, the contrast of choosing peace from the little red ball. And then as people drive by, I'll give them blessings. You have more gas in your tank than you expected. May there be more food in the refrigerator when you get home. May you have a wonderful lunch today. May your art projects complete in an unexpected, wonderful way. May your kids get A's in school today, you and the minivan. Yeah. And I just do that, and it makes me feel great, and I just love thinking, sending the blessings out. But the point is that I have now set a new standard for my innocence, for my peace, by looking at the breaking the rules, not so much because it's breaking the law, that's enough reason, right, for living in a good, healthy body, but because it is less peaceful. It's less peaceful for me to speed. Less peaceful for me to be. So yeah, that's how I feel about it now. it's my Holy Spirit says, hey, we got to work with this. We can do things here. You can have more peace in your life. So Andrew's guilty, for sure. And, you know, my Andrew's body lives in the laws of the land. Andrew's spirit is always seeking for, you know, innocence, but more importantly, awakening.
So, is rationalization a form of love, then?
Well, you know, rationalization would be an ego tactic.
An ego tactic.
Any kind of story is an ego tactic. Love doesn't even explain. Love releases immediately. It, there's no such thing as good and bad. That's made up. That's a release. I felt the freedom from that instantly. I've had that thought many times. Same with the thoughts of where things get really complex in one's life. And I didn't see how I could have done it differently, yet I was plenty guilty of harm. And I thought, wait a minute. Chill out. All things are lessons God would have me learn. That's 193. And two, everything in this world is for your good. Of course, to the Holy Spirit's perspective, everything is for your good, as Carol was saying. And so it's God's problem. It's my higher self. If there's any deliberation to be done on some of these really complex things in life, you know, it's I'm being lived. And this is always the truth. And this is a way to see another person as well, as far as releasing somebody else from guilt. You would see that whatever they did in that moment, when they, you know, we had a situation here, somebody's car window got broken into before the meeting, and their purse was stolen at Trader Joe's parking lot. And we had to reconcile this whole thing. But you know, get down is pretty simple when you realize that that person who broke that window to get the purse, to get the $20, to get the drug, or maybe it's just food from Trader Joe's for their kids at home. They haven't had a job. It's been months, and I don't know what I'm going to do. Got to pay rent, so there's a roof over our head, but what to feed the kids? I'm taking that purse right now. I'm just going to take the purse. I got to feed the kids. If you knew that whole story, and this is the way the world works. Let's just go to something a little bit more. Listen, I need a fix, and that guy raised his price on the heroin down the street. I need 20 more bucks. I really need that fix. All I can think about. I'm just going to take the purse. I'm just going to take the purse now. Maybe I'll do something different next month. But right now, I need another hit.
We're back to rationalization.
We're back to understanding. Because they're still guilty. The world, the laws of the land punish for the broken window, the stolen purse. You know, you broke the laws and all that. So at that level, we still punish and all that. However, what we should be able to extend in this world, for us to bridge back to love, for all the horrible things we will witness and we ourselves will do for the rest of our lives, we need understanding. We need understanding of every act that is not what you consider purely loving. Every one of them, all of them. From the murders, to the stealing the purses, to the bad decisions, all of them. They are all seeking for the same thing as you. That boy to get the heroin, after he gets the heroin in his blood, guess what? Peace. And you, once you get your paycheck, you get your raise, they raise the rent on your apartment, and you need a raise from work, otherwise you're going to have to find a new job. So you go to the boss and say, boss, you don't get it. Either raise or I have to quit. Right? Is that rationalization or is it understanding? And so, you just want to be peaceful. So does one want to break the window. Or murders. They did the murder. OJ slit Nicole Simpson's throat. Because in that moment, what he really wanted was, I don't know, quiet, revenge, to be respected. I don't know. But I'll tell you, it was something. And this is the only way he thought he could have it. even though he had a twisted mind that was sick and whatever. But in that moment, he pulled a knife across her throat to get peaceful. You must have this open-mindedness in this world. Otherwise, guilt will deserve punishment and you will stay to mete it out. Or you will prevent your own self from going to heaven because you think you deserve it, the punishment. And after you get thoroughly punished and humiliated, then you think you can face God and be loving again. Watch out. Watch out. Carol?
I found that one little thing, just reminding gives me great peace of mind. Just reminding myself, everybody has a story.
Yes.
Everybody has a story.
Yes.
No matter who it is.
Everybody has a story.
That you're looking at.
Yes.
Whatever, and it's a shift.
And my point is, you don't need to hear the story.
Yeah.
It's probably helpful not to hear the story.
Yeah. Just knowing everybody has a story.
Yes, but knowing everybody has the same story, I think, is the most helpful.
The same story. Oh.
What is the same story?
They want peace of mind.
They want peace of mind.
Which is a cry for love.
Which is a cry for love.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Right. Everybody has that same precise call and need, and that's why they did what they did. Meditate on that. Seek it out. Challenge me. Challenge yourself. Challenge Course in Miracles to find out if that's true. If you can find your way to seeing that's true, you will have compassion born in your heart. You will have the beginning of release for the most heinous, unforgivable things you can find, which are only there because you designed in sin in your experience of the world, the unforgivable mistakes in the world, so that you could prove separation is valid and real. Compassion, my friends. Compassion comes from understanding, not judgment. Not trying to fix, not trying to help. This is not compassion.
Hard ones hit us. We have to be like to do that a lot. Fix things and help out here. And
yep.
Don't work.
Yep. Anybody else have any phrases for us on what is love's answer? What would love's answer to be to guilt? Let's just say Walt here.
Acceptance.
Easy, quickly. Accepting what is thoroughly. How far can you take acceptance? That's love's answer. Oh, it is what it is. It's not good, it's not bad. It just is what it is. You can accept that.
So that's the shift in perception. That's the miracle.
It's a shift in perception. From wrong to nothing. And actually, it's truly from wrong to right, but I think that might be asking too much. Can anybody do that for me? Can we go there? It really is. Everything gets shifted from wrong to right, no matter what it is. Mm-hmm. If your perception is shifted with Christ's vision, with the Holy Spirit, you go from wrong to right. Right, Julie? Can you back that up? You're the one who's talking about it. God's everywhere, everything.
Go, Julie.
Well, sorry, I was actually struggling with the fact that what you just described is duality. So,
yes, yes.
I didn't particularly like that answer.
Okay.
So you might not want to ask me. but I think that I just have the thought in mind that what is all-encompassing,
yes,
cannot have opposites.
That's right.
And if God is love... you ask what love's answer to guilt is, and it's like, well, it doesn't compute for me. They're incongruent.
There is no answer. How can you answer that if you just said there's no opposite?
Yeah, that's right. This is critical, because, and this is the authority and the patience of A Course in Miracles, is that for all the things we would like an answer for, the book says, well, did you know they're nothing? Did you know what you're worried about actually isn't Is it what?
Real.
Real, true, remembered, memorable. You made it up and nobody else sees it like you do. There's no proof of even what you thought happened. Exactly the way you thought. If I took you back, you'd see, well, I didn't get it exactly straight.
So whatever you think,
uh-huh,
as an answer, as a rationalization about something, is a construct based on stuff that's happened or mm-hmm. stuff that you were told uh-huh. that isn't true.
Yep.
And so all you can do is come up with some answer that's just completely, you know, faulty. And then the answer might shift 2 seconds later, depending on your mood.
Uh-huh.
Something as ephemeral as your mood. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you might feel differently, and then everything shifts around. So how can you predict what's going to happen in the future if nothing is constant? You don't have any real understanding or grasp on reality.
Yes.
It's impossible.
Mm-hmm. It's impossible, truly, to judge, understand something and judge something here.
Yeah.
This is so...
Yeah, true. So yes. You know, any sort of... So guilt implies that there's an answer.
Yes.
There's a right and there's a
yes.
wrong. You
yes.
do it this way or you do it that way.
Uh-huh.
And that is based completely on yes. stuff that you've learned.
Yes.
Which is based on some philosophy
yes.
or some religion that
yes.
invented by some guy 1,000 years ago that has no relevancy to your life whatsoever.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So this is how we can shift from wrong to right and always right.
Yeah.
Just like, let's take cartoons. Cartoons come from a pen and on a paper, and there's nothing there. And then you start curving and swooping and two ears, and how about eyes? Yeah, two eyes, nose, body, put some gloves on it, big feet. It's Mickey Mouse now. And because we have a memory of Mickey Mouse existing before, we can say, that is a wrong Mickey Mouse. He doesn't have pointed ears. Never had pointed ears. You are wrong. Ha! Wait a minute. I'm drawing a cartoon here. You're taking it way too seriously. This is why the advice in many spiritual and Course in Miracles too. You take your life way too seriously. What a relief is that? Learn how to laugh more often about the joke that you have put on yourself. You want to go read where a course says that? It's time. We haven't done it so long.
Let's do it.
All right.
Turn to page 567, maybe. 566, maybe. Actually, I think it's 586. 580. Yeah, it's 586 in the text. Pretty much right in the middle of the book.
Oh yeah.
And you know, this is such a this is like the metaphysics of what went wrong. How did this happen? How could the impossible happen? If all is love and God is one, and Julie was saying, hey, look, fact is God's everywhere. So there's no way to separate from God and have part of God disagree with God. See, you're right away lying to yourself, or you're in some kind of a nightmare or dream that doesn't exist. If you think that's real, because God's one, God's love. Right? But wait a minute. Why such a big book then? Why so many tears throughout our lives? Why so many problems in the newspaper? Well, let's just read about it right here. Here's your answer. Dave, you ready? Why don't you start us with paragraph 5.
5?
Yeah.
How willing are you to escape effects of all the dreams the world has ever had?
You know what? You got to start with 4. You know, whole section is so fantastic, but...
Mm-hmm.
Thus are you not the dreamer, but the dream?
Yes, this is your thought when you believe that the body is a victim.
And so you wander idly in and out of places and events that it contrives. That this is all the body does is true, but it is but a figure in a dream.
And it just got finished telling us the previous section that the key to your salvation for you is that you are the dreamer. Mm-hmm. No matter who the victim and the victimizer in your perception, the truth is, the true you, you, sleeping child of God, are the dreamer of this nightmare. Sometimes fun, sometimes not so fun, but it's still the same mind, same dreaming mind.
And that we chose, like we chose the characters.
Yes. Chose the characters, and then chose one of them for us.
Right.
And we jumped into that one. Exactly. That's what this section is about. This whole section is about that. Please continue.
That this is all the body does is true, or it is but a figure in a dream. But who reacts to figures in a dream unless he sees them as if they were real? The instant that he sees them as they are, they have no more effects on him, because he understands he gave them their effects by causing them and making them seem real.
Now that needs a level of spiritual awareness that has gone beyond the body. Otherwise, those are just nice words and wishful thinking. But that's why there's a workbook, and to pry you away from your habitual thinking and actually practice with meditation. Guided meditation with very specific guidance to move you out of your thinking of being actually a body. And so that's no small task with you. But this is what we're talking about. This is a healed mind would be able to look from this perspective. So fear not if you're not there, but know that that gift is being handed to you right here. Okay, good. Let's continue.
And all we got to do is just change our guilt and our faith and our beliefs is the part that's we got to
change. That's right.
Change it to
yep. There's a thought system that holds guilt in place.
Yeah, and it's so powerful, and we don't notice it because we're putting it all into nothing. So it's very powerful nothing.
Yep, we are believing in nothing. We are remembering nothing. We are defending nothing.
Yeah.
We are looking for more nothing to fill in where the other nothing doesn't seem to be enough.
Yeah, because I notice whenever I pull it out, put it in something that's more real.
Uh-huh.
Whoa. You just feel the power.
This is the good news. You feel the power when you allow your mind to release from the miracle. The holy instant has a very palpable, deep effect. A big shift of assurance and certainty that just wasn't there with all this nothing worship. I mean, think of how crazy what Mark said, but how much we all love it. There is no such thing as right or wrong. Isn't part of you just a little breath of relief right there? Even if you don't know what it means to you in your life right now? That's what a loving comment. What a good answer from love. To be able to accept this scenario that you painted for yourself, knowing that you can't call it wrong, and no worries, you can't call it right either. There's nothing here that is right or wrong. Draw that cartoon however you see fit. Okay.
Yeah, I had an insight recently where I realized that at the bottom of all the thinking that I do, like all the strategies that I use in order to succeed, is some belief that if I do things the right way, it's all going to work out.
Uh-huh. Yes.
But it's like a real palpable belief system that I have that I'm somehow following this thing and I don't know where it came from.
Yes. Yes. Oh, yes. Well, that will all, that whole perspective of that drive that you're feeling and that belief system you're feeling, it will be rediscovered later in your coursework. Mm. At first, it seems like, chasing the wind, and it'll be discredited. For being ego pursuits and more money, more health, more wealth will all bring more happiness, and you'll be discredited first. but then it will be re-recognized. That drive, that the innocence of that drive will be rediscovered and then appreciated and loved. But right now, it can really cause you a heart attack and an early death.
Right.
Yeah, so, you know, you're reading the right book. And I like your honesty and your clarity of your experience. It will really help you blow through this thing.
Yeah, thank you.
It's great. Would you bring us next paragraph, Mark?
How willing are you to escape effects of all the dreams the world has ever had? Is it your wish to let no dream appear to be the cause of what it is you do? Let us merely look upon the dream, look upon the dream's beginning, for the part you see is but the second part, whose cause lies in the first.
Right, the results. Dealing with some belief that then led to some faith that led to, if I make a better world, I'll be a better person and happier for it. These are very powerful sentences, of course. They're clearly challenging at the core. Are you willing to believe that everything you see is not real? Really? Are you really willing to do that? Please continue.
No one asleep and dreaming in the world remembers the attack upon himself. Mm-hmm. No one believes there really was a time when he knew nothing of the body and could never have conceived this world as real.
Okay, so here is a bit of spiritual perspective from the author's awakening. Take it or leave it. Borrow it as strength. Or just listen in. And maybe let a little bit of this higher perspective dawn on your mind. Right now. Right now. You don't have to go back and reread this. But you reread it for us anyway. That last sentence.
No one believes there was really a time when he knew nothing of the body and could never have conceived this world as real. He would have seen it at once that these ideas are one illusion, too ridiculous for anything but to be laughed away. How serious they now appear to be. And no one can remember when they would have met with laughter and with disbelief. We can remember this if we but look directly at their cause, and we will see the grounds for laughter, not a cause for fear.
This is A Course in Miracles. This is the burden A Course in Miracles is attempting to lift from your mind. The block to the awareness of your own, the authorship of everything you think is real. That includes all the problems. Footnote, that also includes all the things you really adore here. All the treasures and treats. They have to be seen differently also. They were very, very, very beautiful chains around a prison door. God, they gleam nicely. I might be held in prison as long as the Glock looks like that.
My Reiki teacher said when somebody was saying how great something was in their life, she responded, "This too shall pass."
Yes. 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 Don't have to go too harsh, but this is so true. And in fact, I was digging into the definitions of beauty, and I the more I looked at them, the more revealing it became. As I looked at the big quotes on beauty, it was many, many years ago. I forget why I was doing it, probably for no good reason at all, but just to pursue it. And these big quotes from Voltaire and you know, Plotinus and all these big thinkers all had, you know, most had something very in common with the rose, and that is, it's fleeting. The most beautiful things that we know of are fleeting. Mm-hmm. And we're willing to grasp their beauty right now without being too judgmental at all, because look, just before the sun sets, look! Wow! This, in this world, substitutes for beauty. What a tragic substitute for your ability to sense beauty.
Wouldn't it be better to find beauty in common things rather than only looking for the special moments and thinking that those are going to last?
Wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yes. Wouldn't it to discover the beauty in the most common things?
Yeah.
I don't know if I tell you this story. I went up in, and this is by no means the way you do have to do this, of course. Any meditation of going to absolute present moment, you will get the same experience. But I went to San Francisco, and I got in the immersion tank. Mm. You know, where it's a couple hundred gallons of water with a couple thousand pounds of salt in it.
And there's two in town now.
What? There's one in town?
There's two in town now.
Oh, there we go.
It's coming here.
Nice. Yeah, so I try on
it. Oh, what does it do?
It's called, sensory deprivation tanks. And so if you want to get into a meditation, really quiet, you can't get darker. You can't get more temperature neutral because the water is 98.6 degrees. And so you lay in this thing, you float in it, they close the lid, and you float in it. And you can just, and you're floating so high because there's so much salt, you can just breathe and go to a completely relaxed state of meditation. So it's very neutrally buoyant. You can't even tell. It's very neutralizing. It's like floating in space or something, I guess.
Everybody should try it.
You're in Nevada water. Yeah, it's kind of fun, interesting.
Everybody should try it.
So I went for it, and sure enough, I went very deep into a meditation, and it was a wonderful experience, and I got out. And I was waiting for my sister to come out. We went with her. And I was sitting in the little lobby. You know, they made it a nice little place, kind of a Zendo kind of feel, and very quiet. And there's six other pods closed up and people doing whatever they're doing in there, you know. And so I'm sitting there waiting, and I'm kind of like, wow, right? And the receptionist comes to me with a mug, just a regular old mug with water in it. And it says, you might want to drink some. You've been in salt water. And I took the mug and said, oh, this is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. It was just a mug. But for some reason, I had this overwhelming feeling of beauty about the mug as I opened my eyes for the first time in an hour and reached this place of simplicity. And I saw this ordinary mug. Was the glaze and the curves and the brown and the white. It was beautiful. Couldn't you see beauty in ordinary things? How lovely would it be? You reminded me of that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yes.
Well, I mean, it just seems so desperate to be always like looking for that peak experience that is so fleeting.
Like the drug user looking for the better.
But we all do that.
Yes.
We're all doing that like a rat trying to bite its tail.
Yeah.
I mean, we're all doing that.
Yes, indeed. Another jolt of juice in our brain's pharmacy.
Yeah.
Yeah, another quote that in my early on when I was first looking at this whole spiritual thing was, love does not compare. Love does not compare. That would hit me. Like, oh my God, I glimpsed the truth of love. And then I would bust myself anytime I was looking at a flower. Don't compare it to some other flower. This flower! It's so easy to see how beautiful something is if you're not looking elsewhere. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because maybe all that moment what the mug had. I had, my mind was empty. Nothing else but that. That mug came into my existence. Mm. Yeah. So how did it all happen? Where did it all come from? Are you taking your life too seriously lately, Bunky? Everything is so painful and possible of loss. Is that right? Is that the real world?
I was just laughing when we were talking about the present, and then I just suddenly remembered this quote I read the other night. It said, gosh, the future just isn't what it used to be.
That's really funny. That reminds me of Miracle Principle 13. Somebody read it real quick. The future is not what it's supposed to be. Miracles are both beginnings and endings.
Miracles are both beginnings and endings, and so they alter the temporal order.
There are always affirmations of rebirth, which seem to go back but really go forward. They undo the past and the present and thus release the future.
Yeah. And as chapter 1 and 2 dig into, and then it leaves behind because it's pretty heady stuff. Time and space are the same. They're the same illusion to build separation on. That too, you can just let go. Along with your body. In the next paragraph we're going to read, we'll describe the mind, the free mind that came into this morass before time and space was an absolute law of which you will suffer or succeed, depending on how you play your cards. Oh, the future ain't what it used to be. Okay, next paragraph. Let us return.
Okay.
The dream.
Let us return the dream he gave away unto the dreamer, who perceives the dream as separate from himself and done to him. Into eternity, where all is one, there crept a tiny, mad idea at which the Son of God remembered not to laugh. In his forgetting, did the thought become a serious idea, and the possible of both accomplishments and real effects. Together we can laugh them both away and understand that time cannot intrude upon eternity. It is a joke to think that time can come to circumvent in eternity, which means there is no time.
Yep. You see the circle there? The broken circle? You have to deny eternity and wholeness and oneness in order to dig into time and have there be consequences in time. And space too, turns out. All that's necessary to make the proper nightmare that you're living. That's what this book is. This book deals with this metaphysical level too. It also deals with your average fears. It also deals with your average guilt, which we're digging into tonight. It also deals with your average problems with your brother. But it also deals with the absolute bottom line metaphysics of what's going on here now.
So what is the term psychic ability?
Yeah, psychic ability is simply... It's simply, you know, it's like awareness. It's like somebody who can see better in the dark.
Okay.
That's all. It's not special. It's different if you don't have it. But it's not special. It's just seeing what is there.
Okay.
And there's a section in the back of the book that talks about, are psychic abilities real?
Okay.
In the last 20 pages of the book. You can read about that. Yeah. Yeah. Now, where else is... Isn't it crazy? Okay, so let us return... The dream that the Son of God gave away, you know, unto the dreamer, which happens to be you, your awakened mind, who perceives a dream as separate from himself and done to him, you poor victim, you. But you're a victim of the characters you made up. And then you decided to draw one, put a name on it and say, that's my name, put a social security number by it and say, well, that's going to live with that now. And you jumped in to your own drawing. You became one of the cartoons that you were drafting and thought everybody else was. You became one too. I said, won't this be fun? Why not? And there's no reason why not. There's not a problem. There's no right or wrong. This is play. And you're taking your play too seriously. Way too seriously. Would you please chill out? Sometimes you should really chill out. And that's what's being offered here. Is the author's perspective having awoken from the very same dream you're in. Same mind. Same dreamer. Same level. On which you still believe is real. Did this part of your mind awaken? And write a book about it. Lucky you. Yeah. And then he spells it out. He says, into eternity... clears his throat.
We're all actually is one. You probably can't believe that from where you are. I couldn't when I was at your stage of... But all is one. Rejoice. But there crept a tiny, crazy idea at which the Son of God... Who? Where? The Son of God. Is that where this whole thing started? You bet your beep.
No, when it refers to the Son of God, it's meaning us.
Yes, yeah. Us. Yes, us. The right-minded us. Us as God created us. Us. Mm-hmm. The right-thinking us.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
But the
not Mark, who is a guilty SOB, who probably speeds as much as I do.
But it's saying that the Son of God remembered not the left. Remembered not the left.
Yeah, key word.
Remembered.
Now, this is for anybody here who's new in A Course in Miracles. I want you to know, mark this, because you have a lot of students with 10 years on you who will not have read this sentence correctly. And they will say, the Son of God forgot to laugh.
Right.
Why is that not right?
Well, because remembering implies a deeper wisdom. Like there's some intent there. It's not like an absent-minded action.
Worse yet, okay, intent, stay with that. Yeah. Julie, what's the problem with just saying, oh, the Son of God forgot to laugh? Anybody?
It's a choice. It's a choice to separate.
That's right, and forgetting is not a choice. Mm-hmm. If the Son of God forgot to laugh, he's a victim. Mm-hmm. And he's living with his mistake like you would with a sin, like you would with a condemnation. Mm-hmm. He's a victim. However, if the Son of God remembered selectively not to laugh at this crazy idea, let's try to make it real. What do you say? You in? High five. Let's try it. Let's both forget. When our hands hit, we are going to forget God and love and bliss and holiness, infinite sharing, infinity, and comfort of every measure. Let's just forget it all and work our way back. From coldness, darkness, sin, guilt, fear, and then death. Ready? High five. You did that! What do you think? Well, yes, it fell. Why not? You know, in a perfectly loving state, we really know all is one. Why not? There's nothing off the table if you understand love. There's no loss. There's no loss. How can we say that? Is that true? You could actually be not fearful at all. Let's go look at the introduction. So let's go look at the very front of the book and look at these powerful words that Helen heard when she finally took Bill's advice to just get a pen and write down whatever this scary voice you think you have is saying. And these are the words that came out. I think you're up, Julie.
What page?
Oh, this is page zero, right?
Oh,
page,
that you're
page
talking
one.
About the introduction?
The introduction, yes. Okay. It's after the table of contents and the preface, so it's like 20 pages in.
And do we read the whole thing or just the first paragraph?
Would you please read the entire introduction?
Wow. You're going to let her do that?
Let's take a deep breath.
This is A Course in Miracles. It is a required course. Only the time you take it is voluntary. Free will does not mean that you can establish the curriculum. It means only that you can elect what you want to take at a given time. The course does not aim at teaching the meaning of love, for that is beyond what can be taught. It does aim, however, at removing the blocks to the awareness of love's presence, which is your natural inheritance. The opposite of love is fear, but what is all-encompassing can have no opposite. This course can therefore be summed up very simply in this way. Nothing real can be threatened. Nothing unreal exists. Herein lies the peace of God.
So there is a simple logic here from which you can derive all the sanity of the book and all the craziness of the ego. But it would require a willingness for you to shift your awareness of what you are. But that's what a spiritual awakening is, right? There's two things, I think, that this course does. Two burdens it has. One of them is it gets you to actually arrive at peace in your mind. The second is to correct your identity. Mm-hmm. And it's not who you are. It's your identity of what you are. Well,
what's the difference?
Who you are is a person and has a individual description. Jeff Hotchkiss, 6'2", eyes of blue, serial, you know, you got a serial number? Bank account, family. And he's good at this. So this is a who you are. And you're
identity.
Son of. Yeah, it's an identity that's a separate but dependent on other mm-hmm. separate identities is who you are. You were not born of my mother. You were born of your mother and your father. And that one moonlit night so long ago. Love was in the air and out came Jeff 9 months later. That's who he is.
And it's, I think there was an alcohol involved.
Yeah.
and some cheese and crackers.
Right? And it's got a lot of a very, and the more we look into it, the more specific we will get to who we are. And the more specific we get, the less in common you and I have.
Right.
When we say what you are, let's just start with human being. Well, 100% I have that in common with you. This level, right? Even at this level, still. And he's a male. And I got that in common with you. He's got two eyes. Everybody here has two eyes. Yes. He walks around on 2 feet. Everybody here walks on 2 feet. Wow! There's so. The more we look at what he is, the more in common we shall have. And the more you look at what he is, you start to drop away the few differences like male and female, and you find out that the organism is really, really similar. Right? And then when you get past the organism, you find out that the muscle and the sinews and everything, and bones and everything that makes him up is he's really similar. You can't even tell them apart. Get down to the DNA, they're identical at the level of base pairs. It's exactly the same. When you get down to protons and neutrons, and he's got maybe a little taller than me, so he's got a few more protons and neutrons, but they're the same protons and neutrons! He's just got more of them than I do to make up the extra 10 pounds. It's the same. Oh my God. The more we look about what we are, the more parity and unity we shall share. And if we hang on to that unity and that similarity, we can come back into the form, but remember, we're the same. Remember, we're the same playing separate part. We're playing differences, but our reality, in fact, is the same.
So it all depends on who gets the transition first?
Well, it's what transition you're looking at. And the deeper you go, they're the same base. When you get to the spiritual awareness, it's even easier. When you get to the idea, when you start to get a clue of what mind is, it's even easier now to see the sameness. And these are all levels of understanding and awakening, back to what's really going on here. But you might just start with human. Everybody's human. The good guys and the bad guys, they are all human. Bones, muscles, brain, eyes. They got hungry, you got hungry, they got hungry. It's the same. They got hungry. Right before they killed somebody that day, they got hungry. You got hungry this morning too. You didn't mass murder, but you both were hungry. 7 a.m. They love coffee. Oh my God. The mass murderer, they love their coffee. You get that, right? You understand loving coffee or tea? Yeah. And they put their favorite incense on because that just makes them feel all good. And you do that too. And then they went out and shot 25 people. So there's a difference. But it's at a different level. It's at a different level now. You switch.
Yeah.
You switched away from what they are to who they are. They're the one who shot somebody. See the differences? See that?
Mm-hmm.
And then that's the trick of being able to, even here, afford unity. It's one of the ways to wind yourself back to where the guilt's impossible and wrong is impossible. So, thanks for asking. That's my speech on the difference between who and what. Yeah. Let's talk.
Love when the Course talks about bodies can't join.
Yeah.
And only the mind can join.
Mm-hmm.
That is so beautiful.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's an idea that that again we need vision to see the oneness.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that the body's eyes just doesn't see it.
If the eyes report differences, that's how they see with contrast and differences. And the brain is programmed to recognize differences and then puts names on them, and you bet. It's all a separation tool that works really well. But minds can join. Yeah, chapter 16 hits that one pretty cold. If you guys are fresh into a love relationship, don't read chapter 16. Enjoy it for a while first. Yeah, you can really do that. Yeah. Woo! Okay, so this is a course in miracles. So let's we'll translate this as we go along here. This is a course in shifting of perception. It is a required course, and it's required because the truth is true and nothing else is true. So it's required because one way or another you will find yourself in the truth. That's all that survives, is the truth anyway. So this is a required course, whether you take it from this book or you take it just from your own awakening. Only the time that you take this course is voluntary, for all I just said. Free will does not mean that you can establish a curriculum, for all I just said. The truth is true, nothing else is true. You can only deny the truth for as long as you continue to dream. But the minute you allow yourself to wake up and shake off the dream, boop, you're back in truth. The minute you get sober, you're back to sobriety and everything looks different. And we are drunk on separation. We are so drunk on separation. We've even given ourselves a new identity based on it. But the minute unity dawns back on your mind, the truth of unity, like maybe you touched a little bit with Jeff and I here, going to what we are and how common all of us have with Jeff versus how different all of the ego would show we are from Jeff. How much commonality we have with Jeff. Do you feel that? You feel the sameness a little bit with that, maybe? That road leads back to abandoning all differences. Chapter 15 ends, you know, it's a Christmas, the end of sacrifice title section, and it says, let's make this year different by making it all the same.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's where you're home. You are home in heaven. Your home, where you are completely connected to all that really is, instead of floating out here in a separate body, struggling for your survival. Enjoy it while you have it, but don't think it's real. And don't think love is here. And don't get too attached at things that die. There's got to be something wrong with that, right? Things that die. Okay? That it's a required course means only that you can elect what you want to take at a given time. Well, there's your freedom. If all this is made up, it's all makety-uppity, and there's no consequence in truth, no hurry. Come home when you're ready. You're not actually left home.
later the Course describes it, you are safe, this is a quote, you are safe at home, comma, dreaming of exile. You're safe at home, so there's no real hurry. The God isn't coming out of the sky to say, that's it, collecting you all up, this is it, time to go home. Dream over. Not going to happen. Because it's just a dream, it's harmless, and you can do this as long as you like. Well, some of you are a little tired of it? Is that what I'm sensing?
Tired of what?
Tired of the dream? Tired of the nightmare? Tired of just taking care of something long enough for it to die? What? Having a few good times before... I mean, when a pet dies, it's just like, that's not supposed to happen. It's a wonderful dog.
Suffering is optional.
Uh-huh, yeah. Suffering is optional. Yes, good. You can navigate it now nicely. But you see suffering is optional. Pain will come and go. But the suffering is optional. Now you're free to navigate it and, you know, you can even have fun with it. Okay? The Course does not aim at teaching the meaning of love? Well, because that's beyond what could be taught. You don't teach, well, love. Because love is being an extension of the power of all that is. Love is a sharing of the manifestation of the power of all that is. So we can't teach you to be. You are the contributor and the extension of love. When you're to experience love, it's because you decided to continue to manifest, to extend that which you already are. So it's kind of ridiculous to teach you what nobody knows yet. Right? Okay. The Course does aim, however, at removing the blocks to the awareness of love's presence right here and now, which is your natural inheritance. Love's presence is your natural inheritance. Now, the opposite of love can be said to be fear. Fear is this opposite sense of being sharing, cared for, safe, abundant, peaceful, relaxed. We call it fear here in your experience. But, and you remember, whenever you see the word but, you can forget everything I just said. I'm about to tell you the truth. You know what I'm talking about? It's like, well, I'm really glad you sat by the door tonight, but...
Forget about it.
You're sitting on the heater vent and we're all getting cold. So forget about being nice that you sat there, because I really want you to move so the heater vent will work. Okay? That's just that's a nicety. It's true. You know, a lot of times. So watch that word but. You can really perk up your ears when you hear that. What is all-encompassing, here comes the truth, okay? Here's what you really should pay attention to. What is all-encompassing can have no opposite. And so miracles indeed go from wrong to absolutely right. A right understanding. From a wrong perception to a right understanding. Always, if you got your Christ mind on and your vision going, this is what you shall see. Right through the haze and the mud and the dark and the blood and the horribleness to, wow, even that? Well, yeah. Otherwise, you found a place God's not welcome. And you've created hell. And you'll have to come up with a character who manages hell. What, the devil? Back to the Catholic Church for you. Which is very, very useful if that's... You know, they navigate really well. Catholic Church, big organization, they also are navigating to love. There's no doubt. It just does it in a way for me. I went through the Catholic thing. And I like this method much better. But it's all about love.
I was home and my mom, Catholic, she's in this Bible study, and she goes, "We studied this book on humility, and I really realized, so like, what sinners we are."
Yes.
Like, yes. Oh, no.
Yes.
The book on humility. I was like, really? That was the takeaway?
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
But it's very useful. And certainly there was a time, and there is a time now, still, for lots of people who have, you know, a huge amount of hubris and pride, and have taken the ego to be God. And they would do well to be broken. Like in the military, or a horse, a young gelding horse, mm-hmm. so full of fire, and man, you can't ride that thing. Yeah. Oh my, you get hurt trying. In the ego, you will get hurt trying to live love with an ego. And so, yeah, maybe the Catholic Church makes you a little humble. But all goes a bit too far, I think.
Well, you know, like, I was reading this book that my brother's ex-wife's mother wrote about growing up in a nunnery.
Mm.
They just like beat the crap out of them.
Yeah.
Made them do stuff. It sounded like she was in prison. Wow. The stuff that she was describing.
Yeah.
And how can somebody who professes to be, you know, Christ or God, yeah. what are they? Christ betrothed or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. They're married
somebody's
to Christ.
Somebody's supposed to encompass love.
Yeah.
Be trying to beat the truth into people.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Pretty amazing. But I have read some beautiful words from some of those mm-hmm. nuns who survived it.
Yeah, well, oh, that have survived it.
Yeah.
And Mother Teresa was a nun.
And it's questionable if she survived it.
Oh, what do you mean?
She tried really, 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 really hard. But there were letters that were found from her that she had her times of doubt. Mm. It did not shake her faith, okay, which is to be applauded. But it's questionable if she was able to get her freedom from all of her acts of service. Oh my God, she experienced the love, and she experienced the being having purpose and feeling the providence support her even through very, 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 very tough times. But it's questionable if she was liberated from all those acts of service.
It wasn't the acts of service that liberated her, it was God that liberated her.
Or her choice, her own choice to be truly free.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, there are some letters that she wrote in her very old age, and that question where she got really honest and says, you know, this was tough. Yeah. Yeah, research that. Tell me what you find.
So her acts of service for what she thought she had is what she thought God wanted her to do.
Maybe some form of guilt going on there.
Yeah. Maybe some form of guilt. I don't know if we know that, but I'm very well maybe.
So but she wasn't free because
but she wasn't.
She thought she had to do that.
Yep, very, very possibly. She thought she had to do that. And then maybe on a better possibility that story is that she did the only thing she knew how that could be called loving. And she couldn't stop. Were she to withhold any more of her service and going into the darkest places and offer comfort, she would be guilty for withholding love. And I think that's the biggest weight that she had. And this is my opinion, all right? I'm not a scholar, Mother Teresa. I looked at it a little bit, and I could see that because I see it everywhere in the whole idea of charity. Is that you will purchase love and purchase forgiveness by doing something in the world. According to this book, you can just go still and come very, very present and understand there's no right and there's no wrong and there's no right. And to go help the people suffering who've got the leprosy and the whole thing in the deepest darkest and hold their hands, that's very nice, if you think so. But just what do you think a hand is, actually, that you're holding? Whoa! That's the level of this book. This is radical stuff. It will say to you with full confidence, you're not a body. And there is no world. It's going to say that. It will surround it with a lot of support. It will mean your freedom, in my prayer case, for sure. It really delivered some freedom.
from all the things that appear to be so real and so guilt-making along the way. I don't know of any other... I don't know how else you would do it in one lifetime. You know?
Can you kind of talk for a second, maybe, or share your thoughts on, like, if the aim of the course is peace of mind?
Yep.
Yeah, that's what we're trying to accomplish.
Yes.
And guilt is obviously a block.
Yes.
To that. And I'm just curious your thoughts on, like, identity and ego. Like, it's so easy to get wrapped up in, I am my job, I am my house, I am my car, my money, my girl, my whatever.
Yes.
And when all of that gets stripped away, it's real easy to flounder and feel lost and not yes. feel like you have
yes.
that peace of mind that we really, really want.
Stability and certainty.
Stability and those
yes.
walls,
yes.
you know, those boundaries that
yes.
give us, you know, we can bounce off of them and stay on
yes.
that center line.
Yes.
So how does one, or how do you, any opinion or any thought on, like, how you go forward in creating an identity that doesn't have artificial walls and boundaries
yes.
in place
yes.
that can still lead you towards that peace of mind?
It works like this, Jeff. It turns out the spiritual awakening is not a death of the body. This is key. Because some people think the only way you can return to God is to die. And this is just another aspect of a dream. You know, no. You're not awakening by death of the body or ending of the body or emptying your bank account or no longer having the limits you described. No. What you're awakening to is what is holding the body and its dream and its limits. You're waking to the mind that is dreaming the body itself. You do not need to end the body to do this. It's not even helpful to do that. Your spiritual awakening is an awakening to that which holds all these ideas that you have. In so doing, the connection to it and the taking it less seriously will come as well. The ability to giggle and laugh at some of the suffering that will come and not see it as so painful. Indeed. This will come naturally. And holding these limits in place can be just as useful. And that's what the book describes. Is now, we're going to take your body and we're going to use it with the Holy Spirit's perspective for communing, for bringing back together what it was made to separate. It's just the quickest way home is to retrace your footsteps. And you've used the body to take footsteps away from unity and done a great job. With this book and the Holy Spirit, we're going to use your body to turn around 180 degrees from dark back to the light. With a miracle. It's going to take a miracle. It will take a shift in perception like you can't imagine. But this is what we will do. And so you leave those limits in place. You can live those limits with security. I have a bank account. I try to keep money in it, frankly. There's no conflict, though. Because I know what that's for now. And it's not for my happiness. It's not for my love. It's not for my fulfillment of purpose. It doesn't mean... Having money in the bank will no longer... It doesn't mean this is the purpose of my life. I've awoken from that. But it does mean that I can afford my Costco bill and I can have some nice food and I can afford a Vitamix. Thank you very much. That's all. So I can gas in my car.
It allows you to play the game.
Yes.
But you have to be aware that it is a game.
That it is a game! Yes!
Just today, I looked at a letter from this collection agency that, you know, that holds my student debt. And I haven't looked at these things in years, and for some reason I just looked at this one today and I noticed that I was past due on something, and I thought, well, you know, I think I should pay this. Even though I haven't paid anything, something told me that, yeah, I need to pay this. I know what's going on, but I'll just go along with that, and I'll do it.
Mm-hmm. It's a reconciliation.
It has all the meaning that you give it, mm-hmm. but it also has no less.
You know, I'll give them the money. It's okay. I'll part with it. It doesn't matter.
Yes.
Because it's just a game.
Yes.
I'll go along with it to make my physical existence easier.
Uh-huh. Yes.
It doesn't matter. Really.
Yes. And it will have gifts for you if you so choose. If you so choose. You are the dreamer of the dream. And you follow these calls that say, I will be more peaceful if I do X. Everybody here, even if it means break a window and steal a purse, I recommend you do it. If you really think that's going to bring you more peace to pay that bill or break that window, go try it and find out. So you will be guided to peace. Real peace. It's these fake, a charity is like fake peace. It's like trying to buy something by sacrificing a bit of your precious time and what have you. Charity in the worst case, right? Of course there's great charity and it's a great way to do it. But a lot of people will just do the charity as a way to purchase a little bit of forgiveness and, you know, a little bit of favor and try to do something good. It's a little bit empty though, yeah? And a lot of times you see this also is that the person who's giving the charity will come in with an overabundance of too much energy on it. This is really a terrible problem and everybody else should be doing this too. And the fact that people aren't doing this, this is the problem with society. That they're not here like me helping out with this horrible problem. So all I know is there's a horrible problem. It's like you aren't going to do it by yourself, so we're lost. This is getting worse. This charity is not the freedom that it can have. Watch these slippery slopes. Follow your peace, though. Every time, go into meditation, ask the Holy Spirit, show me how to choose peace instead of this, and find out what that means, what direction that means, what kind of painting to do or not to do, or the workout, or taking a break, or doubling up. Let's do two paintings. You got two arms. How about two paintings? Come on, baby, pick it up. Whatever it is, whatever it is that invites your peace, this you must find for you. It won't look like Carol's. But you do have waiting for you to discover more peace. Absolutely. This is where the Holy Spirit will be able to work with you at an accelerated pace. And that's why that's A Course in Miracles' first job one is to help you choose peace. But there's a job two that's a bigger picture, and that's change your identity. Whoa. Okay, we're probably out of time. Masako.
So, if the goal is inner peace, then whenever I have a negative reaction to what's going on, that if I'm mindful, I can come back to the self, and when I explore there, it's always about my own inability to accept what somebody said, this particular circumstance. It's always about my beliefs that somehow it's not okay.
Yeah.
And so there, I'm able to bring acceptance because they're all illusions.
They're illusions and they were driven by some ideas that... And I want you to start thinking about this way. Masako. And you're not Masako. Masako had ideas of vulnerability. Masako had ideas of better ways to do it. Masako had some ideas planted in her from her mother or grandmother. Masako had dreams about how things should be. And I want you to start looking at Masako and saying, but I forgive myself for holding Masako dreams in the way of love. And then you can release some of this identity around them.
Yeah. So the you know, and when that happens, we're talking about that holy instant.
Yes.
In that moment.
Yes.
I am restored.
Yes.
I am, you know, something gets unconcealed.
Yes.
And I'm really in one with everything because I'm not fighting anything.
Yeah. Yeah, and Masako's innocent. She wanted it warmer, so she cranked up the heat.
And with, or she wanted it cooler, she opened the window and something blew, some precious thing blew right out. And it's been lost for weeks now. I'm not sure what we're going to do about it. But she was innocent. It was just too warm and she needed some air right now.
Yeah.
Okay? That's innocent.
Yeah. So the point is, always, mm-hmm. it's about my own belief
yes.
that this is not okay.
Yes, right.
That's always the obstacle.
Yes, yes. Now, that's always going to be the case for as long as you live. There will be rationalizations and stories. You're going to give this mystery. Just remember, at the bottom of it, it's all the same prayer. The same prayer for peace and happiness and simplicity and love. Always, always, always. Whether it's Masako or your true self. And now you can see the sameness where it counts the most. Let's have a circle. All right, you guilty bastards.
Hell yes.
Oh, yeah. What are you guilty of? What are you really guilty of? You are all guilty of being extensions of God and love and playing that you're separate. This is what you're really guilty of. You're guilty of being hungry for love and truth. You're guilty of actually wanting to experience the real power of love. The raw power of love that forgives by saying things like, there's actually no wrong way or right way. Go on and draw that cartoon any way you see fit. There's no harm done or even possible because God is everywhere all of the time. It's only you dreaming God is not present. Only you dreaming of a darkness just so you can see what light looks like from the dark? No problem. And guilt is just a fabricated part of a dream that has no consequences. And we'll dig in more as we go along to look at some of the metaphysics of guilt and just see how silly the idea that it should be suffering really is. You dreamers, just catch yourself right now for a few moments before we let go of our hands and recognize the ones next to you. They're all part of your dream and you of theirs. This concert of mind, dreaming up the separate pieces. No harm has been done. It's a circus. Everybody loves the circus when you know it. Thank you, thank you. Amen.
Thank you. Amen.
Sully!
Thank you. Guys, whenever we're doing it, it was all moving around. We had a whole conversation about how that was. It was kind of forcing miracles.